July 27th, meeting of the Lawrence Douglas County Planning Commission will come to order. And first, I want to make sure everybody in the audience that's here knows that the conditional use permit for the Fraternal Order of Police shooting range was deferred. So if you're here on that subject, okay, very good. All right, then I'd like to ask if there are any written communications, staff, commissioners, or others?
Mr. Chairman, I believe somebody sent, Jamie Holsey sent you directly an email correspondence. Just wanted to note that for the record. It came in after our submittal deadline, so we did not post that email. But those of you who have read it, it came directly to you. Otherwise, no further communication.
Okay. Just, yes, Commissioner Lees?
Brad Remington, email at 11:24 a.m. Scott Myers, 8:53 a.m. Leanne Cooper, 8:11 a.m. And the one you just mentioned, Jamie Holsey, at, I assume everyone got these, 1:42, and William Flores.
Okay. Just to make clear for the record, if these emails have gone to the planning director and to the other commissioners, are they considered to be part of the record then at that point?
Per your bylaws, we don't forward communications to you. I would think that it's use your discretion as to whether this particular item is a legislative action, not a specific rezoning request or special use permit request. And so it's a little bit looser in terms of using your discretion, I would advise.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, disclosure of ex parte communications. That's in Commissioner Lees has provided. Anyone? Okay. How about declarations of abstentions? Anyone abstaining from anything tonight, Brad?
Not now.
Okay. Very good. Then we'll move into our first item. It's a non-public hearing item, and that's the Lawrence Municipal Airport Master Plan. Item number six.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just give you a brief before the consultant takes the stand. Some of you know, and some don't, that you sit as the airport zoning board occasionally for permits and rezonings, of course. But the development code specifically calls out the planning commission as the airport zoning board, and says that that the city can't issue a permit for anything airport related until it's approved by the planning commission. And so there's been, Chuck Soles, our public works director, is with us tonight. So you know to blame him for the potholes first and foremost, and all the good work going in this summer on repairing those potholes. But Chuck also is charged with managing the city's role for the airport. And he's been leading the charge in the airport master plan revisions. So we thought it advisable to bring that forward to you to A, just give you information about what's going on at the airport, allow you to give Chuck and the consulting team any input, because you sit on a specific role related to the airport, and then they'll move that forward through the city commission process later on this year.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Patrick Taylor. I'm here with Mike DiMaterico. We are with Kaufman Associates. We're an airport planning firm. We're based in Lee's Summit. And it's been our pleasure to be working on the master plan for the last year. We're in kind of the final phases of the plan. We thought it might be a nice opportunity to give you maybe a short 10 or 15 minute presentation on what we've been doing.
Is this the control?
Yes.
You have to turn it on and switch on the side of it.
There we go. Okay. So airports are a little bit different. There are many levels of planning that affect airports. At the highest level, it's the federal level, and this is a master plan that's been funded primarily through a federal grant at 95%, and the city put up a 5% match for the master plan. The FAA likes to see a master plan, or at least some type of planning document related to the airport, about every 5 to 7 years. This is the first full kind of update of the master plan since 91. Now, there was a narrative report done in 2005 after the last extension. So this is really actually the right time to do an update of the master plan. There's also state roles in terms of planning for airports, but it's a little bit more of kind of a top-down forecasting effort for all the airports in the state. There's a metropolitan role, which isn't very predominant here because there's only one airport, but an area like Kansas City, you might see an aviation plan for the region. And then, of course, the local plan, which is the master plan. It is your local vision and document and forecasts for aviation demand for your airport. The master plan is intended to be a proactive document. Airports, like any major transportation project, can take, airport improvements can take quite a while. It can take one or two seasons and can be longer than just a short-term project. So it's important to plan ahead. There are many levels of approval, including environmental approvals. So that's really what we're trying to set in place is a set of projects for the airport that they might anticipate being needed over the course of the next 20 years. The process itself is prescribed by the FAA, and I'll go through that briefly in just a moment. And there are two pieces of the master plan that the FAA approves specifically. One is the forecast. So what we're forecasting is aviation demand, and that's defined as, at least in this case, the number of airplanes that are based there, so that's generating a demand, as well as the number of operations and the activities, so the number of times planes are taking off or landing, as well as the types of planes. So the FAA will approve those forecasts as well as the ALP, which is the airport layout plan. It's the technical CAD drawings of the current and the future condition for the airport. When we're doing a master plan, we always like to have the input, as much input as we can, of local stakeholders. So with Chuck's help, we assembled this group of people representing a kind of a diverse group that might have interest or relation to the airport. Not everybody is on the airport board. Some of these folks are in the planning department, are related to economic development, are regional or national aviation interests. So it's a broader, diverse group of input that we worked with throughout the plan. Looks like it's a little fuzzy, but this is the process. So those circles on the left represent each time during the development of the plan that we presented draft reports to that planning advisory committee, the PAC. And those are the dates that we got together with them. The first phase involves basically an inventory collection followed by those forecasts and then a facility requirement. So based on the forecast growth, what do you need over the next 20 years? The second phase was an alternatives development, so basically different layouts for the airport. And then we have a third phase, which is the recommended plan for the airport itself. I think one thing you'll kind of notice as I'm talking is I'm really talking very specific about the airport, and I'm not talking about broad areas outside of the airport. That's because the airport master plan is about the airport. One area that we do discuss in the plan is the zoning. As was mentioned, you all have a role there. And so the zoning regulations are presented to document within the master plan as well. This is an area I always like to discuss briefly, particularly with folks who may not be out at the airport or understand airport terminology as their everyday job. But airports are defined by these letters, this capital letter A, B, C, or D, or followed by a Roman numeral. This is an FAA designation, and it helps us to define what the design parameters are for an airport. So Lawrence is a general aviation airport. This is not a commercial service airport. This is not intended to have commercial passenger service, and it's not planned for that either. All we're, the airport currently can accommodate basically the breadth of general aviation aircraft, which is up to some of the largest business jets in the world. But beyond that, passenger airplanes are not intended for regular use out here. There we go. Up. Do you all have a screen? I'm curious. Can you see these a little better there? No? This is your only screen?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is a summary of the forecast. So I mentioned that based aircraft is an indicator of future growth, as is operations. So the based aircraft right now is about 60, and we foresee that growing primarily based on socioeconomic conditions, population growth, aviation industry trends, things along those lines, growing up to about 90 airplanes within 20 years. So that's what we're primarily trying to plan for and accommodate in the layout. Operations go from about 32,000 to 45 or 50,000, it's hard to see here. And that's a reasonable growth expectation. Kind of the big jumps for operations really don't occur until you get to about 150,000. So it's just, you're just kind of growing along appropriately there. Again, it's an airport that can accommodate business jets. We see some growth in that area, and those are the most demanding in terms of design parameters for the airport. So this is the result. This is the layout that we've come up with. I might just point out a couple of items here. First of all, everything in red is new pavement. Everything in yellow, the squares, are potential new hangars or buildings for aviation uses. The kind of solid blue is parking or roads. There were a handful of items that were important changes from previous planning efforts, and I might just point those out. One is the potential extension of the primary runway. So we see a short-term need, so in the next 5 years, to extend the runway about 400 feet to accommodate aircraft. They're already operating out there, but they're limited because of the runway length. So that'd take us from about 5,700 feet to 6,100 feet. We have a secondary extension, which is a very long-term possibility. This is an important consideration for this group from a zoning perspective. There is a possibility in the long term that larger business jets could become the critical aircraft. That means a plane that's operating 500 or more times at the airport. If that is the case, there may be a need for this longer, secondary, long-term extension. And by having this on your plan now, the airport can protect the airspace to accommodate that long-term extension. So it's important to have that consideration and not constrain yourself in the future. Other important elements is the layout of the new apron and this. This is all being planned for aviation-related development. That's something that the FAA concurs with and wants to see. Basically, anything that's accessible to the ramp should be reserved even beyond the 20 years for hangar development, aircraft hangar storage. You don't want to be putting non-aviation-related businesses that don't need access to the runway, there. So that's what this is doing, is preserving that area. And then we also are laying out some specific land use parameters on airport property. So for example, all these blue areas, this is airport property that isn't needed, not only within the 20 years, but well beyond that for aviation development. So this could be commercial, industrial type uses, short, small office buildings, anything like that, anything to support revenue for the airport. In fact, this area can also be used for that because that exceeds the need for hangar-related area, but it could also be developed for hangar areas. The one other thing I might point out is this taxiway. This is a red taxiway that was not on any previous plans. This is an efficiency opportunity to have a secondary access to this T-hangar layout, so that was an important addition to the plan. So those are kind of the big highlights that emerged from the process. Another element of the plan is the when and the time frame of when various projects might be needed. So this exhibit is showing all the short-term projects that we've identified, which is years 1 through 5, intermediate term years 6 through 10, and long-term years 10 through 20 and beyond. So everything in red is stuff that we have identified as a need in the short term. Some areas I might point out is this property here, which is not owned by the airport currently, but it is encompassing this runway protection zone, so that trapezoidal area. Now the airport does own an easement over it, so they can actually control the airspace, but the FAA would recommend to own all that RPZ, runway protection zone property, when possible. So that's part of the plan. Of course, I mentioned the short-term runway extension, short-term apron expansion, hangar development. Those are the big items that we see in the short term, as well as a rehabilitation of the primary runway. think the rest of that stands out. One thing, I want to point out is the long-term runway extension to 7,000 feet. It's only going to be justified if you have an operator or several operators combined that need that. So we'd be talking about large airplanes going a long distance on hot days, like a Gulfstream 5 on a regular basis. So if you get one or two of those based here, which is possible, then you might have a justification for that. But once that happens, there'd be an impact. US 24 and 40 would have to move. Some property down here would have to be acquired. So we're just kind of laying the groundwork for what the expectations are for that. So part of the plan is the capital improvement program. We worked with an engineer who put together some bid tabs, some cost estimates for all those projects. The plan itself is about a $35 million 20-year plan. I might emphasize that there is no allocation of funding for any of that yet. So some of those would be high priorities and would be available and immediately eligible for FAA grant funding, and some of it may not. But it is prioritized right now for the airport. Again, some environmental concerns and impacts. One of the most critical for airports, of course, is noise. So we've developed, based on the forecasts of activity growth, new noise contours for the airport. Kind of the outside yellow bubble is that critical level. It is the 65 day-night noise level average. So that is the level of critical impact for FAA and HUD and other federal agencies. The good news is none of those noise contours go off of airport property, so you control all the property where those go now and where it will be in the future. So we don't have a noise impact problem. Okay, so that's kind of the brief summary. A couple of things we are still doing. So we're in the approval process right now. We're in a draft final. It is on the project website, which is down here. It's just lawrence.airportstudy.com. The draft final is up there. We're going to be presenting it at a public workshop at the airport terminal building next Wednesday from 5:30 to 7. Welcome to come by to that. It's a drop-in thing. We're not making a presentation like we are here. We'll just be available for any individual questions. We'll have boards all around us with many of the exhibits you just saw. So then we'll go to the Airport Advisory Board, then City Council, and then we'll be printing final documents, and then we go through a process of submitting that technical drawing, the airport layout plan, to the FAA for their approval, which will take several months, as long as they get back to work. So with that, if there's any questions about the master plan, I'm happy to try and entertain them.
Any questions? Thank you.
Sure, great.
No, you told me not to. It's a light agenda. Okay, next item is item number 8. This is a public hearing item. This is the Comprehensive Plan Amendment to Horizon 2020 for Chapter 14 Inverness Park District Plan. Dan?
Good evening, Commissioners. Dan Warner with the Planning Office. I'm going to talk to you about the Inverness Park District Plan. Since we have some new commissioners on this body, we're going to take a little time to sort of review the whole point of this. The plan before you tonight is a district plan. It's a long-range plan that the planning department does for Lawrence and Douglas County. This is a specific future land use plan for a specific area or maybe an issue. They guide future development so the city and the county can use this document to help them make land use decisions. They anticipate development, in this case, over a relatively short period of time. What the plan does is identify future land uses and outline goals and policies. What the plan doesn't do is annex property or change zoning upon adoption, and there is still some land in this planning area that's in Douglas County, in unincorporated Douglas County. And there are some general steps to the process, and at this point we're in the adoption process. Just give you an overview of the long-range planning efforts over the last few years. Primarily we've been focusing on the outside edge of Lawrence. More recently have turned our attention inside and completed the Oread plan last year and are working on the Inverness Park plan currently. I will remind you that the Northeast Sector Plan is currently in process and will be coming back to the Planning Commission in September or October. So we'll look forward to bringing that back. The planning area for Inverness Park is about 300 acres. You have Clinton Parkway on the north, K-10 on the south, Inverness on the west, and Crossgate on the east. Again, most of this area is in the city. This portion here is still within unincorporated Douglas County. This is the existing land use for the planning area. The numbers on that map represent the primary focus of this plan, which is a future land use for those undeveloped properties. So number one here is the corner of Inverness and Clinton Parkway. It's about 11 acres. It's currently zoned RSO, which is a residential office district, which basically permits offices along with low and medium density residential. We haven't recently received development applications for that particular property. This number two here is the Remington Square property. There's about 5 acres on this property that's still undeveloped. That property is zoned RM15, which is a residential multifamily district. The 15 represents the number of dwelling units permitted per acre, and that is 15 units per acre. This current development has maxed out the density on that property. They are currently maxed out at 15 dwelling units to the acre. And we have recently received development proposal for that remaining land on that property. Number three is the corner of Crossgate and Clinton Parkway. It's about 3 acres. Currently zoned RSO, just like number one and number four. We most very recently received a proposal from Hy-Vee to put a convenience store and car wash on that property, and that would require a rezoning. The RSO does not permit those uses. And then number four, RSO zoned, it's about 1 acre. 5 and 6 are in the county. 6 is completely encumbered by the regulatory floodplain. A good portion of 5 is as well, but there is some land that's outside the floodplain on 5, and those uses are currently ag. So beyond those properties, we have multifamily, high-density residential uses in this area, future open space here. This yellow is a low-density residential, which is here too. This more tannish color is duplex zoning or duplex land use. And then this property is an existing park. There's just a few different schools that are adjacent to this planning area, as well as some parks. Real quick, the history of this plan. The City Commission initiated this plan on November 9th. We had a kickoff meeting on February 3rd. It was well attended, and we asked folks at that meeting to provide input regarding the area's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and participate in a future land use exercise. We had a second public meeting on March 3rd. Those in attendance were asked to review draft goals and policies that we presented, and also review and comment on future land use options. And I believe that agenda for that meeting is attached to your packet somewhere. The first draft of the plan was released on March 21st, and then we took the first draft to the Planning Commission on May 25th. And the Planning Commission held a public hearing and provided varied direction to staff on that plan, or on that draft.
Varied direction.
we'll talk a little bit about that. Staff released the second draft of the plan on July 5th. The second draft is the draft that's up for consideration this evening. I want to point out, if you're reading that draft, and if you want to just get to the changes, the deletions on that draft are struck through, that language is struck through, and it's still in black. The additions are in blue and they're underlined. Most of the written comments received to date have been against additional multifamily for the area. We've received some comments that are supportive of non-residential uses. We have a property owner that continues to support increasing the density at the Remington Square property. And then, like I said earlier, Hy-Vee has proposed a commercial development for Crossgate and Clinton Parkway. Draft includes existing condition section, goals and policies, and a future land use plan that has category descriptions, future land use category descriptions. All right, we're going to revisit what we presented at the last meeting as far as the future land use options, again, kind of for everybody's benefit, but also the new members. So the first draft had three future land use options, and this is the first one. It basically called out, this was our sort of our status quo option. So this one said that the RSO, the residential office, is okay here, the medium density is okay there, the residential office is okay there. This is the change. This would be low density and open space. In order to develop that, they'd have to annex, rezone, plat, all that good stuff. Option number two puts neighborhood commercial on the Inverness corner along with a buffer. It had neighborhood commercial on the Crossgate corner, residential office here. Medium density stays on that property. And again, that property is maxed out to that medium density currently. And then this stays the same, low density residential and open space. And option three is pretty much the same as two, except that it puts high density on the Remington Square property, which would allow that property to rezone to a higher density. And then again, neighborhood commercial on the Inverness and Crossgate corners. So for the last meeting, we got direction from the Planning Commission. Some of the comments were not supportive of additional multifamily in the area or higher density for the Remington Square property. Some were supportive of additional limited multifamily for the Remington Square property. We had some comments that were supportive of the neighborhood commercial designations on the corners. And then there was some support for that buffer on the Inverness corner and also strong design for the commercial. So taking in consideration the neighborhood comments, the property owners, the Planning Commission, developers, this is basically what we've come up with for the second draft. So it's option three from the last discussion. It's neighborhood commercial on the Inverness corner with a buffer, high density for Remington Square, neighborhood commercial here. But this is a future land use plan, and you can't just take the map by itself. You have to go find the categories that describe these uses. So we changed the residential high density to say basically that this category is limited to one bedroom, one story apartments, which is the similar use to the existing Remington Square property. And then deleted some of these uses and just said one bedroom, one story multi-dwelling structures are appropriate. Kept RM24 in here, and I just realized not that long ago we struck that PD out of there, but maybe we can change that. And so that's the deal with the residential high density. It's limited to one story, one bedroom apartments. All right, there's a lot of language here. We'll try to break it down. This is the neighborhood commercial category description. So it describes what's going on with the neighborhood commercial. This first paragraph basically says no multifamily allowed in the neighborhood commercial. CN2 permits certain multifamily uses. That's a neighborhood commercial zoning category. This plan says no, just commercial uses. The next couple paragraphs in there talk about the fact that that's 11 acres and it's could be a rather intense commercial property. So there's discussion in there about comparing it to certain other neighborhood commercial centers around town that are of a similar size, and we'll look at some pictures of those towards the end here. Then it talks about, because it's likely to be a little bit on the large size, that would talk about designing it to fit the context of the neighborhood, try to preserve some open space, talks about four-sided architecture because it is on three different streets, pedestrian connections, and the like. So really trying to hone in on the fact that design and context is important with that corner. And then this paragraph here talks about the Crossgate corner. It's about 3 acres, won't be quite as intense, but design's still gonna be important, and pedestrian connections will still be important on that corner. So in the primary uses, we struck these residential uses out, added the CO district, which is a commercial office district. That is basically the only zoning district, commercial zoning district we have that does not permit any residential uses. So comparison purposes, what is 11 acres of commercial gonna look like? This first picture here is Castled and Clinton Parkway. It's the Hy-Vee on Castled. if you recall that. It's definitely larger than what we're talking about here, but there's a Hy-Vee with a strip center and a couple outlots there with a bank and a restaurant. Castle and Bob Billings, about 9 acres, probably a little closer to the acreage. We have at least 2 strip centers here with a gas station and a bank. Bob Billings in Wakarusa is about 8 acres. That's on the southeast corner. You have a strip center with a couple outlots. And then 6th of Monterey, again, that Hy-Vee, the Hy-Vee on 6th Street. A little big, but there's a Hy-Vee with a strip center, restaurant, gas station. So with that, staff recommends approval of the CPA and also approval of the PC resolution if appropriate. Questions?
Thank you, Dan. And this really isn't an applicant per se, I'm sorry. This is a public hearing item. Any members of the public wish to step forward and speak? If you're an individual, you have 3 minutes, and if you represent a group, you have 5 minutes.
Good evening, Commissioner Hurd. I'm Matt Goff with Barbara Emerson Law Firm, here tonight on behalf of Remington Square LC and Hy-Vee Inc. On behalf of both organizations, we would adopt the plan as written, but with respect to the Remington Square apartments, I think we need to clarify one thing. The existing apartments are two-story. Was that intentional to say one story?
No, it wasn't from the author's standpoint. The intention was to match the existing development, two-story, one-bedroom development.
And if that's the case, we would also adopt the two-story approach and basically say more of exactly what's there. Beyond that, I'll stand for any questions you have for either of the two applicants. Thank you.
Anyone else care to speak? Amazingly quick. I guess we'll bring it back up here to the commissioners then for discussion.
You want to close the public hearing?
Move to
close the public hearing.
Second.
There's been a motion to close the public hearing in a second. Any discussion? All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed, motion carries unanimously. Commissioner Finkeldey.
Question for staff. Although I think I'm supportive of the plan, I was kind of intrigued by the league's letter on a PD overlay district, and Dan, you mentioned maybe not striking PD. Can one of the two of you talk a little bit about just what that would look like and if we should leave? Why you mentioned that?
Well, I can talk briefly about the PD amendments that the Planning Commission recommended. Increasing density is now part of the development code that was approved by the City Commission. If we allow the PD, if we mandate plan development, it gives the Planning Commission the authority to look at landscaping and open space and a little bit of the quality and character issues of the development in lieu of just the site plan approval process, which doesn't give the public the ability to kind of provide input into the overall project. I don't think it's our intent, though, to allow the PD that would increase density. And I don't think that's what the applicant is looking for in this case. I think they want to match the existing development there. So those are the kind of the pros and cons of a PD. It gives the commission and governing body a little more control over the aesthetics and the design layout. And then I think, though, if we include PD overlay, that we would want to put language in there about not giving any more density than what our land use designation is in the plan. Does that clarify a little bit of the issues?
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Comments? Commissioner Finkeldey.
Dan, I appreciate your work on this draft. I know we've gone around and around quite a bit, and as we've done in a few previous plans, I think you really solved some of the most difficult issues outside the map, which is what everyone wants to look at, but you've solved a lot of those difficult issues in the wording, and you know, I think, I know you've done that a time or two before in some other difficult matters, but I think you were able to tailor this in such a way that I think we meet a lot of the goals that we were concerned about. I mean, I certainly recognize, whether or not they're part of the official public record or not, we had a lot, quite a few comments that they don't want additional density in that location. But I do think the limitations you put in the plan, I think, help address that. I do like the commercial on the two corners, and I'm excited for what that might do for the area. So I'll support the plan as written by staff.
Mr. Chairman, can I follow up on one thing Commissioner Finkeldey
questioned
us about? The incorporating the PD overlay, or even requiring a PD overlay with the land use designation, is a tool, a method that has been employed in very contentious areas in the city, that the city commission wants to see site plans where there's some contentious issues. I did just want to state that the league's proposal is something that staff would accept for this plan as well. So I just wanted that on record.
But just to be clear, the site plan would, I mean, members of the public could see versions of it, could comment to you, and Dylan's would be an example of one where it did go to the city commission, even though it didn't technically have to. You send it to the city commission, right?
Correct. A very contentious issue in its own right. We waived our final authority, granted that to the city commission, and they saw it and did that. I just, it's a little atypical.
Yeah, I'm not saying
requiring that. The PD would give it your review of it as well as the governing body.
Okay.
Other questions? Commissioner Berger.
What kind of motion do we need to make to put the PD overlay to a vote?
Well, we could work on the specific language. I think if you make a motion that would direct us to incorporate language that the plan would allow the density and mandate the RM24 PD, that would be the only zoning category permitted under that specific zoning category. And then we could articulate that a little bit better in the designation itself, that because of these unique circumstances of the area and the abundance of apartments, that a PD is proper in order to get the increased density at that specific location.
Another question. Do you recommend the PD overlay for the whole plan or just the increased density? Multifamily.
I think it could be employed on all the vacant parcels because of what we know about how the neighborhood feels in this area. I think they may want the ability to provide the input. It's always a delicate line. Always a delicate line to walk between a property owner's rights as afforded to them by the development code to develop the property and the neighborhood's ability to provide that input and comment on it. As you know, the neighborhood has no veto power. They have some input power. They do have some appeal authority. The more I sit here and think about the issues in the neighborhood and the reason we got this plan underway and all that sort of thing, the plan development district is a very effective tool for dealing with these kinds of issues.
Well, I would like to make a motion to that effect. I'm not exactly sure how to state that, but.
Okay.
Just make the same motion.
If I understand correctly, Commissioner Berger, you're moving to add a PD overlay to the zoning on part of the plan or
the entire plan
over the all four of the parcels, actually all six of them.
May I?
Yeah.
Are you indicating that that would be under the current designation of RM15 or to RM24, which you spoke to? Because the way I read the letter from the league was that they were, that they felt that development would be allowed under what they were looking right. for, even including the RM15.
There's really two ways to look at it. The RM15 with the current PD code language would allow an increase above the RM15 density. Or we could go to RM24 and note in the plan that that density shouldn't be increased with the PD overlay code standards. I mean, I guess there's two different ways to look at it. I'm not sure which one I would recommend tonight, but I think what's important in your motion is to give us the your intention, the values that you want to advocate in the plan, and then we can look at that specific language and share that with you. We might want to just direct us to send that to the city commission, but I think if you say you're okay with accepting Remington Square to expand in its current format up to an RM24 density, but you want to review the site plan through the plan development overlay district, then that's a clear intent in your motion, and we'll go make that happen in the plan.
Commissioner Finkeldey.
Ask Matt to comment on that from Hy-Vee's point of view and Remington Square's point of view.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'll start with Remington Square. They have not had an opportunity to evaluate a PD overlay as an option to RM24 with a limitation for two-story single-bedroom units. On some quick math, the PD overlay would not result in the same number of units. It would be a lesser number of units than what the RM24 would be, building exactly what is presently built. It's not at this time an option that Remington Square would like to pursue. That is not the zoning application that's before this commission on file. I don't have an objection to including a PD overlay as an option for those who wish to use it. But at this time, we are more in favor of the originally drafted RM24 single bedroom idea. Fits perfectly into keeping the intensity of the uses to what we have now, and alleviating some concern about having larger three, four bedroom units being built on that site. And I think that is really the primary concern that folks have, is just that the intensity of the use will increase. And this proposal doesn't necessarily increase the intensity on a per unit or per square foot basis. With respect to Hy-Vee, the application on file is to rezone the property to CN2 with a SUP to allow fuel sales. It does not include a PD overlay. Moreover, I believe the PD overlay requires a minimum of 5 acres. This site for, not anymore?
We changed that.
Okay, that's not online yet. did I answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you.
Scott, can you address, for example, I mean, if we, you know, for example, Hy-Vee in particular, for both of them, I guess, I mean, Hy-Vee has an application on file. I don't know if it's, I think we saw the August, maybe one of them was coming to us in August. Except, I mean, will they have to resubmit? Will they lose a month? Will you?
If it were scheduled for August, they may lose a month. If it were for the September, I think there's time to add to the application. We'll just notice it up differently when the time comes. There may be a month or two delay in those applications, depending on how this plan works out. But there could be delay.
And then I saw you have a questioning look on your face when you said that, when Matt said, or Mr. Goff said, that there might be a lesser number of units.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if Matt had followed the process for the plan development amendments we just recently completed. They probably just got online last week, posted to our website as the adopted ordinance went up. But as my memory serves, it wouldn't reduce the number of units allowed there in terms of how we are allowed to calculate it in the plan development district. but it probably does demand a little bit of review to make sure that it's what they're looking for. I mean, we're not trying to accommodate this project per se. We're trying to make a good plan, one that benefits the neighborhood as well as the owners. So we may want to look at that and see what it, effect it has on that. I don't believe it has an effect to reduce the number of units that would give, that would have, would be afforded with the RM24 PD overlay. I think I know what the issue is, what the intent is, and I think the code would allow it.
Okay. Mr. Finkelstein, did you want to? I saw Mr. Goff signaling. I don't know if he.
I apologize. When we talk about a PD overlay and Remington Square, are we talking about a PD on RM24 or on RM15?
Well, what I was talking about is if the Planning Commission is speaking like they're supportive of an RM24 density with a plan development overlay on top of that base density in order to look at things like open space, rec areas, the things espoused in the league's letter, landscaping, those sorts of things. That's, I think, what we're talking about.
It's my understanding that it was RM15 and that PD would allow a 25% increase in density over the existing. That's where my numbers were coming from.
Well, and it gets more complicated than that, Matt, as we look at how the density is reviewed. But I think that's, I'm not necessarily advocating for the league's RM15 with the PD. I'm advocating more for an RM24 with language that says that the allowance that the PD affords for increasing density shouldn't be applied. In other words, so you get the RM24 density and the commission and governing body gets the ability to work its will on the site layout.
And so the net effect of the PD overlay is to give this body another opportunity to review specifically the site plan.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Does that make you, I saw you shaking your head. I wasn't sure what you were agreeing with. You're a little.
We like coming down here. Any additional meeting to look at the site plan is always fraught with any number of very specific and sometimes detailed discussions about moving a tree 10 feet this way or what type it is. We would hope that it would not entail such a specific look at it, but if it just means we have more of a public process for something that will get a lot of interest, preferably not, but if that's what it takes, then we would do that.
Okay. I've often told the joke, but this is the exact piece of property, the exact same parcel that we spent hours talking about whether or not there should be a bench and how far elderly people could walk from the bench and where the bench should be back in the good old days when we reviewed site plans all the time. I love this piece of parcel. Okay.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion by Commissioner Berger, I think, to add a PD overlay to the entire plan. And it would be RM24 density, but with the restrictions that you noted, Scott.
That's what I understand.
Are we all on the same page on this? For the motion. Okay, there was a second by Commissioner Singleton.
With the conditions in the staff, in the draft, to that specific
right
parcel of RM24.
One bedroom, two story, PD overlay required.
Okay, any questions about what the motion is? Any comments, discussions of the motion? Commissioner Finkeldey.
I can certainly understand what we call lot one and lot two. You know, the big commercial, the second, I might even be convinced on the third, you know, the Hy-Vee parcel of that the PD is required. I'm just not sure on that small commercial office, which is number four, and certainly the residential section, number five, I don't see why we should require a PD overlay on the residential section. But I don't know if staff has any comment on requiring a PD overlay to the residential or the small CO and then even the smaller commercial piece.
I think we would probably agree with that position. We get kind of caught up in the Remington and the big commercial spots, but I think we would agree with that.
Just the first, just one and two?
Right.
I mean, I could be convinced otherwise, just.
I think the corner where we may disagree is on the Hy-Vee section. I mean, that's an important parcel for the community along Clinton Parkway, which has had a lot of tax money put into the aesthetics of it. We may want a little more control over that.
Okay.
I would be willing to amend my motion to include only parcels 1, 2, and 3. Some hesitancy on not including 4 because of its proximate location to the retirement area, but I would be willing to amend that if the second would.
Yeah. Okay, we have an amendment of the motion and acceptance of the amendment by the seconding commissioner, Commissioner Singleton, to apply the PDO to lots 1, 2, and 3. Okay, any questions on the motion as it currently stands? Further discussion?
I do have some.
Commissioner Belt.
Yeah, thank you. I guess I would like to hear compelling reasons why we should move from RM15 to RM24. It seems, according to the PD overlay that Scott described, that we would still increase the density on that 5 acres specifically. And both sides who are vying for interest in this, both stakeholders would both gain something and give something at the same time. So I guess I'd like to hear from other commissioners specifically why an RM15 would be a bad designation for this PD overlay.
And Scott might help me out on this, but I thought that the switching to RM24 with the limitations noted would not increase the density. It would simply allow the additional 5 acres to the east to be built upon.
Well, it would bump up the density from what's there now. It has maxed out its current density allowed by zoning.
Okay, all right.
So this has been a sticking point with the neighborhood that they didn't want to see that 4 or 5 acres developed with any more apartments. The argument, Commissioner Belt, that staff has tried to articulate is that, rightly or wrongly, the developer chose to develop this portion with a little bit of risk-taking that they would gain some other density to get the other portion developed. They didn't develop to the intensity they could have under RM15, so there's an argument that they left a lot of density on the table, a lot of intensity on the table, in other words, and they're just trying to capture that through an upzoning. And so it's ground that is valuable. It's valuable to develop. It would be considered a type of infill development, and we're just of the opinion that it's probably not the project that's creating some of the harm and angst in the neighborhood. It's the larger projects there that have a lot more amenities, much bigger rec areas and pools and those kinds of things. And so taking all that into consideration, our recommendation is to allow them to recapture some of that intensity that they didn't use when they site planned this originally.
Exactly.
Okay, any other questions? Comments? I'd like to weigh in on the motion a little bit. I'm probably going to support the motion. I think the appearance of what fronts on the Clinton Parkway is something that is so essential to this community that a PD overlay on those three parcels would, I think, be appropriate. with regard to Remington Square, if the builder did leave some of the density on the table, so to speak, I have no problem with them building out the rest of the land as long as it is consistent with the type of structures and size and mass and that sort of thing that was employed in the first phase of it, if you will. So I would support the RM24, but with the limitations noted by staff. Anybody else? Oh, Commissioner Kohler.
I would also support the RM24 with the PD overlay on those first three lots, 1 through 3. And as I had shared in the May discussion of this, I support you know, that infill development of that land to match what is currently there and to put that land to good use. And so I would continue to support that with the additional oversight of the PD overlay district and the conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay. Commissioner Lease?
Like the last two commissioners who just spoke, I also support RM24 with the PD overlay. This is one of those situations that makes a night like last night feel a lot better, because I know how much work has gone into really trying to address the issues that the community is concerned about, while also trying to work well with developers, and it makes it a whole lot easier for everyone. So I think Scott articulated well the history and why we would consider RM24 rather than RM15. The letters that I got, probably all of you got the emails that I got today. I wish those people were here tonight, because I would like them to understand what decision's been made and how much thought's gone into trying to make sure that everybody's concerns are addressed. So I'm very happy that I'm going to get to vote in favor.
Any other discussion? Okay, do we have a motion and a second? Was the motion to approve the plan with those changes? Okay, all right. Any questions about what we're voting on, the motion before us? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Motion passes 7-1. I did it, 7-1 or 8-1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 7-1. Okay. Thank you very much.
Two stories, right?
We didn't say where you start measuring. Okay, the next item is item 10, the ever-present Agritourism Committee.
Good evening, I'm Mary Miller, a current planner.
Where are all the people, Mary?
I don't know.
Hot topic, huh? This could take hours, I don't know.
They'll beg for the minutes.
We had the report and recommendation on last month's agenda for the Planning Commission to receive, and this month we're requesting that the Planning Commission initiate two text amendments to implement the Agritourism Committee's recommendations. One is a text amendment to initiate special event permits in the county, very similar to the ones in the city. These are for temporary uses rather than requiring conditional use permits for those, and they would apply to agritourism uses as well as other uses. The other text amendment requested is to define agritourism as a use in the county, to define the different levels of agritourism, develop standards, registration, and approval processes for the different levels of agritourism uses. And so we are requesting the initiation of those two text amendments.
Thank you, Mary. This is a public hearing item, so.
I move to close public hearing.
All right, we're going to close public hearing. All those in favor? Opposed? Passes unanimously. You have questions for Mary about initiating text amendments? Yes, Commissioner Berger.
I don't know the history, but what does this have to do? Does this open any doors for the Wakarusa Festival type of activities? Or is it just having the permit gives you options and tools to work?
The special event permit might allow something like a Wakarusa Festival. That would be so large it would go to the County Commission. But it would be just like in the city if you were going to have a festival or a concert. This would allow you to do it on a temporary basis. We've had a lot of people, especially people that get conditional use permits for temporary sales, for instance, Christmas trees with ornamental bulbs and things. They said it might be easier to get special event permits rather than have to go through the entire CUP process, which is almost like a minor rezoning of their property. And so, yes, it could be possible to walk through as a festival if it was going to be on private property or property not owned by the state, you know, like not at the lake. They could request a special event permit, and then the process would require, similar to the city, that would go to the County Commission for approval. Just because of its size and nature.
Commissioner Von Ocken.
I just wondered on some of the smaller venues how necessary it was to get dust abatement on these roads, because it seems like a real burden on landowners to have to pay for that.
That is something the committee has looked into, and I know one issue we asked is the farm tour every fall that has hundreds of people, and we asked the townships if they'd gotten complaints about dust, and they hadn't. So dust abatement is kind of an ongoing issue, and I think it would depend largely on the number of people they expect to attend. But I know we've approved a dust abatement measure for a reception facility where the farmer was just going to spray water on the road. They didn't have to enroll in the county's dust palliative program. So there might be other
measures. Is it to protect the tourist or the neighbors?
It depends. It could be, it's typically used to protect landowners that live on the route that you're taking to arrive at your destination, but a dusty road could also be an issue for vehicles. But so it depends. If the dust palliative is just being placed in front of the residences, that would be to protect the homeowners and the residents there. If it was a concern with safety, then they would have to do it along the entire length of the road.
Commissioner Von Ocken, I might make one point in the report that's stuck in the end here. One of the recommendations we're making is that the county governments be involved in funding dust abatement programs, because this is an economic incentive, a stimulus to the economy in the region to have agritourism uses, and that the influx of tourists and commercial activity justifies the county government spending some money on dust abatement, because it is an issue. And one other thing I'll add, and that is, I think it's a lot more of an issue to people that live in town and come out to the country than it is for the people in the country.
Well, as somebody who lives on a gravel road, this
so
is something
I.
I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around, that they come to the country and they don't expect dust. Now, if it's to protect the neighbors, then I totally understand that.
Yeah. Well, primarily it was for the neighbors. I think that was the main concern.
That makes sense to me.
Because those are the people that complain about the dust.
Yeah.
You know, the people that follow the single line traffic up to Circle S in miles of dusty road don't seem to complain about it like the people that live along the route.
Okay.
You know? With that, that's an issue that we discussed long and hard. You know, it's $1.60 a foot.
Yeah.
And there's a big argument that it will corrode your cars. You know, so there's a lot of different ways of looking at this. And one of the things we did, and is in the report, was to locate where the present agritourism uses are, so that you can look at the amount of roadway that we're talking about here. And I hope that in a future study session with the county, we can actually talk about spending money at specific locations to help with this issue. It's taken a year and a half to get everybody on board that this is a great idea.
Well, I'm not trying to muddy that up, but we're not talking about the smaller events. You're talking about the larger.
Not necessarily. In fact, that's what we're advocating here is a tiered approach.
Right.
If it's an isolated event that has a small amount of traffic, somebody wants to hold two or three weddings a year out at some place. That can be done by a much simpler application process than something with intense, frequent uses. That's the design, anyway.
Okay.
That's the goal. Have I captured that fairly?
Yes, you have.
Okay. Mr. Berger.
If I could just, have we closed the public hearing?
Oh, the public hearing's closed, yes.
Okay. I just want to say, taking kids on bike rides, the difference between taking bike rides on asphalt roads out in the country and gravel roads is a huge difference at this time of the year. And just preserving these gravel roads and whatever we can do to work with the agritourism to help them preserve these roads, I think has a real benefit to the county and the region from an environmental standpoint. So.
I wish they would pave them all, but unfortunately, I live in Willow Springs Township,
and on the report,
they're not going to pave it, so.
It's good for the tire company.
Yeah.
My husband loves to ride his bike on all these gravel roads, so.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Well, we get lots of bike riders out where we live, and
yeah, we do.
Salute. I wouldn't want to breathe the dust myself, but.
So do we need a motion?
Yeah. So, yes.
One each?
We need to separate.
I think we can do one motion.
I.
Commissioner Lees?
Did you say one?
I think we can do one motion, yes.
I think it's best captured in Mary's
there
letter.
You go.
Yeah. I move that we initiate the two text amendments offered by planning staff regarding the agritourism committee's recommendations. Do I need to read them? I don't think so. You got it? Good. That's what I thought. And that's the end of my motion.
Second by Commissioner Culver. A discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Anything else, Scott?
No, sir.
Good work.
Commissioner Lees?
Of course.
Okay, I promised last night that at our mid-month meeting, we would be talking about process. And I said after tonight, we would have a better sense of what that would involve. I would ask all of you, please, to have questions prepared as you did at our orientation. We will ask for them by email first and then secondarily on newsprint. If you don't know what kinds of questions to ask, let me give you some suggestions. The question was asked by Matt, what percent increase is possible with a PD overlay? I don't know. I don't know that any of you know. So that would be a question you'd ask. Just asking how a PD overlay works. Commissioner Van Auken said Monday, I couldn't have said it better. I feel kind of overwhelmed with these subdivision regulations, major and minor plats and replats. A good question might be about how to understand these things when they're new to us, and maybe even further explanation. I know it's inappropriate, so I'm discouraging any specific discussion of decisions we've made, but the concepts come up over and over and over again. How a deferral process works and why might be a question. I burst in with a description or a list of the five communications I got, when really it was more appropriate to wait until the chair asked for that. So that might, ex parte, thank you. And understanding the public's response, we talked at the orientation about how to listen to the public. At least one commissioner tonight was affected by the community's response to two things, and just getting a better understanding of how we should process community input. That's something we talked about a lot at orientation. And then finally, the last thing that came to mind as I was making a motion, I think it would benefit the commissioners, and there's one that has only been able to make it to one meeting, you know, just talking about how to decide how to make a motion. These are questions I hope you will ask at our mid-month meeting. I think questions like that will make that a terrific mid-month meeting. I'm not going to ask these. I've already suggested them if they're interesting to you. I'll email all of you asking you for questions for August 10th. That will begin at 7:30 in the morning in this room.
Okay. Anything else? We are adjourned.
Thank you, Chairman.
You bet.
Good job.
What's that?
Well, you know, we're making progress. These things take time.
That's a good goal of mine.